Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Welcome to the Voices of Courage show. Today, our show is called The Courage to Have Better Healthcare Outcomes. Yes, we're talking about you. We're talking about your health. We're talking about your family. We're talking about the environment. We're talking about a few things that are going to help you to really have better healthcare outcomes. I have a question for you. Are you or anybody that you know going to have a surgery in the future? Well, if you are, I want you to pay close attention to this show today, because I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, maybe a lot about, what you need to know in the healthcare system and what you need to ask and what you need to, how you need to show up so that you're prepared. You know, I think it's, I don't remember the exact number. I know the doctor I'm bringing on in just a second is going to give me that number. But it's a very high number as to how many deaths are going on in hospitals today because of medical malpractice. Well, not so much malpractice. Medical, I would say, incompetence. And we want to be aware as consumers not to necessarily turn your power over to a wonderful, well-meaning doctor. That's great that they're there and they're well-meaning, but you know, they have a lot on their plate just like we do. So it's up to you to take patient responsibility for going in. We're going to be talking a lot about that today. I really want you to be educated. I want you to be able to have a great experience in your healthcare journey. And you know, let's face it, a lot of people are going through that journey right now. Whether, you know, we just came into another flu season. You know, we've still got the remnants of the COVID going through the society. You know, we've got a healthcare issue with the obesity in this country and around the world. We've got a lot of issues here. So we're going to be talking about how you can best prepare yourself. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to introduce my very special guest today. Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm talking with Dr. David Wilcox. And for those of you that don't know, David has a brand new book out. It's called How to Avoid Being a Victim of the American Healthcare System. And you can get that book. David, we can get that. DavidWilcox.com or Amazon or where?
Amazon. And there's a link to it at DrDavidWilcox.com.
DrDavidWilcox.com. Okay. Yeah. We'll definitely put that on the screen so people can see that, DrDavidWilcox.com. Before we get into your book, I just want to make sure that people knew you had this amazing book. We're going to take a deep dive in that in the next segment. But right now, I want to ask you about prescription drugs and a little bit about why they are so high and what we can do as consumers around this.
Sure. So the prescription drug agency or the pharmaceutical business really charges us about 10 times more in this country than they do in other countries. And there's reasons for that. First, that you know, they say it's research and development and America's paying for it, but they're getting several tax breaks that you and I don't get either to do research and development. So you see people going to Canada to get drugs and things like that. Well, what you can do as an individual for your high pharmaceutical prices is you can research them on GoodRx, you can get coupons to bring down the price, or you can go to Mark Cuban's online pharmacy and find your drug there, have your prescription sent there. The thing that you should know about that is the money that you pay for the prescription from those two sites does not go to your deductible. You can save your receipts and ask your insurance company to apply it to your deductible, and that'll be up to them to do. But the reason why the price is so high is we have these middlemen in there that sit in the distribution chain called pharmacy benefit managers, and they're the ones negotiating the price and often pocketing the difference. So they work between the insurers and the pharmaceutical companies, and they actually work between your physician and you too. Sometimes you don't know what they're doing, and sometimes you find out very quickly. Like people who are going to, the doctor prescribes an expensive chemo drug, they'd come back and say, no, you have to try this drug. Little to no medical training, but they're telling the doctor they have to try a different drug due to the cost. So it's kind of a brutal model. But it's interesting. So if you really want to see a model that's working well, Mark Cuban is actually adding some pharmacy benefit managers who are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, passing the savings on to you, the individual who's paying for them. So he's been very selective in that. And so I'm watching that model because that's really what should be occurring, not these guys in the back room. And, you know, and if a doctor calls and wants to talk to the pharmacy benefit manager, they can't. You can't get these guys on the phone. They keep them hid away, basically. So they're making these decisions. They're using rebates and coupons. A doctor might write for a generic drug for you, but if the brand name gets them a little bit more money, they'll give you the brand one, and you'll pay more out of pocket. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy model, but there is hope. And that Inflation Reduction Act that's now passed into law, Medicare will be able to negotiate drug prices for 10 drugs starting in 2026. And Part D will be capped for senior citizens on Medicare at $2,000. Currently, right now, if you're on Part D, you have to pay $7,050, and then you have to pay 5% over that, which doesn't sound like much until you talk about autoimmune disease drugs. You talk about chemotherapies and things like that. It can add up significantly.
It can add up a lot, you know, which, you know, from my point of view, gives a lot of impetus to take care of your body and maybe even find some alternatives to some of these high prices.
Exactly. Exactly.
It makes a lot of sense. I have a lot of doctors that come on the show and we talk about that. You know, we talk about the ways that you can remain healthy, you know, but now we're talking about, you know, if you're not healthy, what's the way to go through this system so that you can come out better than you were?
That's exactly
right.
Yeah.
You know, I think of, you know, just back on the drug thing, I think of drugs like ivermectin, you know, in the before COVID hit, man, we could buy that stuff for next to nothing. And now, you know, it's all over the place.
Right.
Because you got to shop it. It's like shopping cars now.
Right. Exactly.
It's something else. So I'm glad that Mark Cuban is doing a good job. By the way, what's his company? Where do we can go to your website and find that, right?
Well, you can, if you sign up for that free healthcare resource guide, I've got a direct link to it there.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. Yep. But if you Googled Mark Cuban's online pharmacy, you'd be able to find it.
All right. Yeah, that's really good. And we're going to put it on the screen again. So go to Dr. David
Helps.com.
Yeah, drdavidhelps.com. drdavidhelps.com. I'm having a hard time reading that. All right. Listen, the other thing I want to talk to you about, I do want to jump into your book, and maybe we'll start out a little bit in this segment because that book is really moving and changing people's lives. What motivated you to write the book?
So I have a multiply handicapped daughter that I took care of for years. I was a bad teenager. I had her when I was 17 years old. But I would take her to doctor's appointments, and I had a lot of respect for the medical staff that I met. I didn't have so much respect for the healthcare system as a whole because the system itself wasn't very good. But the clinicians I met really wanted to make a difference. And so I was in manufacturing, and then when I got laid off, I went to school and got my LPN degree and started nursing. And then I eventually went back and got my 2-year RN degree, my 4-year BSN degree, my master's in healthcare administration, and then my doctorate. So I kept going to school forever. And what motivated me was once I've learned all this, I thought, how do I educate the average American to understand what really happens in healthcare? Be it if you get the insurance company denying your bill, what can you do about that? Or your pharmaceutical costs are through the roof. And I thought, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to break it down into layperson's terms so that everybody has the same knowledge that I have, if they want to read the book and find it. And I hear from readers all the time saying what a difference it's made. And, you know, I'd heard from one guy, he went in for a surgery consult and he asked all the questions and he told me that the surgeon looked at him like he had three heads because he didn't understand where he was getting, you know, how he was that informed. And that's just basically it. I want people to be safe in the healthcare system. I've seen unsafe situations. I've seen great clinicians. I've seen really good outcomes. But if you're not educated in it, you don't stand a very good chance.
Yeah. My wife was admitted in January of this year, and
Fortunately, I've got six nurses in our family, right? My sister's been a nurse for 40 years. So we were up at her ranch when this happened. And I would come home every evening and my sister would ask me probably 25 questions of what I was supposed to ask the doctor, right? So I would go back and ask the doctor that the next day because I just didn't know. So this book is so amazing and powerful because it has a lot of what we need to ask in the book.
Yep, it definitely does. The other thing that we should touch on too is if you're going for surgery, I forgot this, have a patient advocate with you. Have somebody who knows your healthcare condition. Like you went with your wife, right? She got admitted. It's very important because there's going to be times where you're going to be knocked out and somebody's going to be giving you medications, maybe through an IV line or something. And so you want to have somebody there who knows your health. I actually did a podcast with a guy who told me he was sitting with his wife and the nurse came in and drew up some insulin. And he said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm going to give the nurse the insulin or I'm going to give your wife her insulin." And he said, "My wife isn't on insulin." So he was able to stop that because he knew what his wife took and she was in the wrong chart. So looking at the wrong.
Well, you know, that same experience happened with us. I mean, the doctor would come in. We had different doctors. One doctor would come in and prescribe one thing. The next doctor would come in and prescribe something else. And so I needed to, you know, really step up and starting asking why are you doing this? Why is this? Why have you diagnosed? And, you know, and Judy, of course, had the final word. She was still there, awake and alive. She said, "Don't put that in me. I don't need that." Right. So, you know, she took charge of her life. And as a result, she's alive. I think right. If we kept pumping different drugs in because they didn't know what she had, it's like, I'm not sure that's the highest and best of what we want to do.
So. Yeah, and the data shows that if you're going to get hurt in a hospital setting, it usually centers around medication. Like 5% of the people in the hospital get hurt by medications. And it's not like the clinicians don't want to do a good job. They're rushed. They have to move fast. Sometimes they take shortcuts. Like for medications, they should be scanning your wristband, right? Scanning them to make sure it's you, scanning the medication. They should be doing that in front of you in the room. If they're not, then you need to ask them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, listen, next on my agenda here is insurance and what we could do to maybe lower our insurance costs. Why is insurance so high? And, you know, what the heck can we do here? So I got to take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the insurance side. All right, we're talking with a courageous man, Dr. David Wilcox. And we're talking about the courage we all need to step into the healthcare system and really be an advocate for our own health and be able to have other advocates with us and individuals that will question what's going on so that we get the best, the highest and best healthcare. Everybody's busy. Everybody doesn't have the same amount of education, you know, in the healthcare system. So I believe everybody I've met in the healthcare system really has the right heart there. They came in for the right intentions, but it doesn't mean that, you know, that they're not infallible. They, you know, and we need to really take charge of this. That's what we're talking about. Now, insurance costs. Why does my insurance cost so darn much and cover so little?
Right. So let's talk about the model because that'll help everybody understand it. So insurance company is a business. They don't necessarily care if you have good health outcomes or not. What they care about is getting their 15 to 20% to their stockholders, right? Because they sit between you and your provider and sometimes make decisions about your health care because they have a lot of power because they're the one paying for your health care. So the high costs that you're seeing and insurance, it really is so they can provide a profit. And then, you know, if you get really sick, they don't want to cover it. Like if you have to get chemo or you've got MS, they don't want to cover those medications because they're very costly and that takes money away. So the insurance companies basically keep their rates very high to cover those few people with chronic conditions. And, you know, 85% of Americans have chronic conditions. Some of the changes that we saw, insurance companies could actually tell you that they're not going to pay because you have a pre-existing condition. That That was fixed through the ACA legislation years ago. But it was just, you know, they have to return like 80 to 85%, which they consider a loss, of every dollar back into the healthcare system. They're not, you know, anytime you can remove an insurance company from being between you and your provider. And I think that's why we see when people hit 65, they get inundated with all these Medicare Advantage programs, because that's the insurance company trying to keep a piece of the pie, right? If you just sign up for Medicare directly, it may cost you a little bit more, but nobody sits between you and your provider. Whatever they prescribe, you're going to get. You don't have to have that middleman who has a CEO they have to pay an enormous salary to sit there and help and oftentimes make decisions about who's going to get paid and who's not.
Yeah, and I think we need more education on that, that part of the Medicare area, because I think that, you know, the pitch is that, you know, you sign up with the insurance company, they get between you and Medicare. Medicare, you know, without the insurance company, I think picks up maybe 80%, if I remember correctly. But with the insurance company, they're picking up 100% less deductibles and copays. What's the advantage or disadvantage there?
So there is gap insurance, and this is something that people don't know a lot of. So if you sign up with a Medicare Advantage program and then you say, wow, I really got raked over the coals, and the next year you go and sign up directly with Medicare, well, the company that's providing your gap insurance can turn you down for previous conditions. If you go directly to Medicare the first time, you sign up with them, and then you purchase gap insurance, you cannot be denied the gap insurance for the other 20%. It's going to cost you a little bit more money, but like I said, anytime you can remove the middleman who's paying those big CEO salaries out of the equation, so it's just you and your doctor making this healthcare decisions, you should definitely do that.
That's interesting. Well, you know, the latest that I hear, you know, I've got a senator friend up in Idaho, and they're really moving into, they're trying to push legislation for value-based care. Is that something that's happening nationwide? Is that just in small states around the country? What's going on with value-based care? And why don't we define that for our audience that doesn't know really what that is?
Sure. So our current system is fee-for-service, which means nobody makes any money unless you show up sick, you show up to the hospital, you show up to the doctor's office, and then there's codes in which they make money. So when we saw COVID come in and people were canceling elective surgeries, hospitals needed to be bailed out by the taxpayers. 25% of Americans know about value-based care. Value-based care is basically the insurance company gives a group of doctors money for you, and they say, okay, so here's David's pool of money. If you can keep him healthy and out of the hospital, you can keep the profit, right? So now what you've got is a care team that's incentivized. Remember, fee-for-service, you had to show up sick so people got paid. Now you have a group of doctors, nurses, PTs, respiratory therapists, social workers that are incentivized to keep you healthy. So if you look at the data between fee-for-service and value-based care, of course you see better outcomes, because value-based care, everybody's got to keep you healthy in order to collect that money. And, you know, I actually have a story in my book about my sister, my brother-in-law, who got a hip done under value-based care and then went to the emergency department because his heart was racing because they gave him, you know, Percocets, and he doesn't drink, smoke, or anything. And so all of a sudden they're getting free nurses. And my sister says to me, she says, all these nurses coming out and checking on him, and it's all free. And I said, oh, no, honey, it's not free. I said, you know, he accessed the emergency room. It costs them money. Yeah, he was under a fixed fee for that hip. So, but it is a much better model, and it's one that we're seeing move across the country. And just about anywhere you are, you can find a group of doctors. In fact, ask your doctor, are you part of a value-based network? And if they say no, say, well, can you recommend somebody who is? Sends a very strong message, right? It's like, I know the outcomes are better in value-based care than they are in fee-for-service. And if you're not part of it, doc, I'm willing to switch docs because, you know, I want to make sure that I have better outcomes. Mm-hmm. You get the Texas for the flu shot. You get the Texas for your colonoscopies do. I mean, they are incentivized to keep you healthy.
Well, I love that. That seems like the wave of the future today. So I I'm wondering, speaking about the future, I'm wondering about technology and how technology is going to impact our future. So I'll take a real quick break, come back. Let's discuss how we can utilize technology to have better healthcare. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back again. I guess we're having a little technology glitch ourselves here today. I want to let everybody know we're talking with Dr. David Wilcox right now. Do you discuss the technology in your book, Dr. David?
Yes, I do. Technology is a great tool to keep you from running into complications. So we talked about value-based care. So let's talk about how that works with technology. Most of the time when people have congestive heart failure, you might slow down. They show some signs, but they don't know that they think maybe I got a cold, you know. They show signs of weakening, and then all of a sudden they go into a full-blown crisis and end up in the emergency room, which is a very costly way to get healthcare. In fact, the emergency room is the most costly way to get healthcare. Using technology, you can do things like wire in a Bluetooth blood pressure cuff, a wireless scales, pulse oximeters to measure your oxygen levels. You can plug in your Fitbit or your Apple Watch, and a nurse navigator can look at the data and say, geez, David is slowing down. He's not walking as many steps. I can see his O2 sats are falling, and I can see that he gained 4 pounds over the last 3 days. So then they're going to contact you and say, hey, you know, we need you to jump on with your physician and talk about these changes that we're seeing. And the doctor's going to up your diuretic or manage your medication. And then you're not going to go into that full-blown crisis like normal people would in a fixed fee or fee-for-service type model. So that's technology is a game changer. Even Best Buy is getting into it. They'll come out and set up a whole hospital bed in your home, you know, if that's what you need, complete with oxygen and everything.
All righty. Well, that's pretty amazing. Listen, I'm at time. We got to be back. Really informing and probably life changing to some people here today. Dr. David Wilcox, so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. And again, you know, if you're listening to this show and you need some advice about the system, the healthcare system itself, you can email me too. I have an access form at drdavidwilcox.com. That's drdavidwilcox.com. I have many people reach out to me because they need some help. They're having problems with the system. Maybe it's an insurance bill. Maybe it's a pharmaceutical, prescription, that kind of thing. So please feel free. That's why I'm here. I'm here for you guys.
I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you,
guys. I want to thank all of you for being on the show today. And if you have some family or friends that you know is going in for a procedure of any kind, please send them this show and connect with Dr. David Wilcox. Help them to be informed so that they can come out healthier than they went in. That's the whole name of the game. So from my ears, I pray that you will continue to look for a CD of simple and nobly and knowable, duly and simple. Take care. Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Welcome to the Voices of Courage show. Today, our show is called The Courage to Have Better Healthcare Outcomes Yes, we're talking about you. We're talking about your health. We're talking about your family. We're talking about the environment. We're talking about a few things that are going to help you to really have better healthcare outcomes. I have a question for you. Are you or anybody that you know going to have a surgery in the future? Well, if you are, I want you to pay close attention to this show today, because I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, maybe a lot about, what you need to know in the healthcare system and what you need to ask and what you need to, how you need to show up so that you're prepared. You know, I think it's, I don't remember the exact number. I know the doctor I'm bringing on in just a second is going to give me that number, but it's a very high number as to how many deaths are going on in hospitals today because of medical malpractice. Well, not so much malpractice, medical, I would say, incompetence. And we want to be aware as consumers, not to necessarily turn your power over to a wonderful, well-meaning doctor. That's great that they're there and they're well-meaning, but you know, they have a lot on their plate just like we do. So it's up to you to take patient responsibility for going in. We're going to be talking a lot about that today. I really want you to be educated. I want you to be able to have a great experience in your healthcare journey. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of people are going through that journey right now. Whether, you know, we just came into another flu season, you know, we've still got the remnants of the COVID going through the society. You know, we've got a healthcare issue with the obesity in this country and around the world. We've got a lot of issues here. So we're going to be talking about how you can best prepare yourself. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to introduce my very special guest today. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. And right before I introduce my guest to you, I'm going to give you the quote of the day. The quote actually comes from me today. And it says, if you have not the courage to step past what you think is possible, you'll never experience the magic of life. With that, I'd like to introduce my amazing guest. His name is Dr. David Wilcox. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. I was looking forward to our discussion today.
I'm so looking forward to it with you, especially because I have a pending procedure coming up. So this is a good timing for me, too. So Dr. Wilcox is a doctorate prepared nurse who holds a master's in health administration and is board certified in nursing informatics. Dr. Wilcox has 28 years of healthcare experience, in which he has worked as a bedside nurse, hospital administrator, and in healthcare information technology, which has helped him to develop a unique perspective on the American healthcare system. He's also the author of a book we'll be talking about today, How to Avoid Being a Victim of the American Healthcare System, A Patient's Handbook for Survival. And this is really important. All this is important, Dr. David. Well, okay, you know, what's going on in the healthcare system today? Let's just jump into it.
Okay, so let's talk about the severe staffing shortages we're seeing coming out of COVID, because healthcare workers were very much taxed, and the acuity levels went up with COVID patients and things. So we have a lot more clinicians exiting, both physicians and nurses, to go find something else to do because of the overload. So that makes it even more important that you, who are listening to this show, enter the healthcare system with some knowledge about how it functions, because healthcare is complex, and it's not complex by accident. It was designed that way to keep the healthcare entities that are vying for your dollar getting your money. So the best thing that you can do is proactively educate yourself, because you're going to need healthcare at some point in time. We all are going to need healthcare at some point in time. And it's a whole different world when you get in a hospital, or, you know, when doctors start talking to you in terms you don't understand. So you have to be educated enough to be able to be a partner in your care, not just do what the white coats tell you, do what the nurse tells you, but be an actual partner in your care. Know about your body. Don't be afraid to speak up.
Wow. All right. So listen, I did find the statistic. Medical errors are about a third of the deaths. They account for a third of the deaths in the United States today. What can we do as a consumer to protect ourselves in the healthcare system today?
So one of the things that I strongly encourage, if you're not going for an emergent procedure, like if you're going to the emergency room because you have chest pain, you're not going to be able to do this. But prior to it, actually, at one of my websites, drdavidhelps.com, I have a free healthcare resource guide, which will allow you to search the quality ratings of the hospital, the quality ratings of the doctor, and even a pricing transparency tool to help you understand what the procedure is going to cost, because in healthcare, prices are not very transparent. There's also one-click access to GoodRx and Mark Cuban's generic online pharmacy in that healthcare resource. You just send your email to me. I'll make sure you get a copy of it, and then you'll get my periodic updates.
Well, that's awesome. Okay, you say send the email to you. Is that on drdavidhelps.com?
That is where you sign up, yes.
Okay, and for my listening audience, drdavidhelps.com, H-E-L-P-S.com. So, that sounds amazing. Now, I have a question for you about that. I mentioned that I'm getting ready to do a procedure, and so the best thing for me to do would be go on drdavidhelps.com and then look up my doctor. Is that what I just heard? Look up the doctor what's going to tell me when I get there about the doctor?
You're going to see reviews from other patients when you start to look at the doctor. You're going to be able to see what other patients are saying about the doctor. You can also look at cms.gov, which is also the one-click access, and you can find out is the hospital have quality ratings. So they rate by stars, one being the worst and five being the best. And so I always counsel people not to go to a hospital that's under 3 stars at least. You want to go to the best one, of course, that has 5 stars, because that means that their infection rates aren't as high as the rest of the country. They're taking more precautions. And that's how you start your research. If you use this other transparency tool that's in there, you can actually look and filter by those ratings, because you may be able to get your surgery less expensively a town over, right? Or maybe an ambulatory surgical center. So Ken, when you're talking about procedures, there's two ways you can do it. You can either go to the hospital, which is always going to cost you more money, or you can go to an ambulatory surgical center, which means that you'll probably be out the same day. They do all kinds of procedures at ambulatory surgical centers. They don't do open heart, of course,
Right.
There's a list on cms.gov that will tell you exactly what procedures have to be done inpatient. So you can go there and look. If I was paying out of pocket and I didn't have insurance, a total knee in the Charlotte area would cost me $12,000 at the hospital, will cost me $8,000 at an ambulatory surgical center. And the quality outcomes are better at the ambulatory surgical center than they are at the hospital. So those are the kind of things, that's the research that you want to do.
I have another thought about that. Do you know what the percentage of people that are uninsured in America is today?
I don't know the actual number, but I do know that 40% of Americans won't even access the healthcare system because they're afraid of what it will cost. And so, and again, that's price transparency. You don't go and buy a car and then get the bill later, right? With healthcare, the way it functions is you go get your care and then it goes through all the billing cycles and then you get the bill.
Okay. All righty. So, all right, let's say I'm going to have a surgical procedure, I've looked up the doctor, I've looked up the ratings, I looked up the hospital. Is there anything else I should know before I go into that procedure?
Yes. During the consult with the doctor, you want to ask some very specific questions. First of all, you want to be the first case of the day because the doctor's well-rested. And remember, after midnight, you can have nothing to eat or drink. So waiting until 5 o'clock is a miserable experience if you can't eat or drink anything. So ask to be the first case of the day, because that quality outcomes show that that works better for you than being the last case of the day. The other thing you want to ask the doctor is, are you actually going to be doing the surgery on me? Now, that sounds like a no-brainer, but In teaching hospitals, oftentimes it's an intern or a resident who's being supervised by the doctor, and you have the right to ask for the doctor to do your surgery in that scenario. So you definitely want to ask that. You also want to ask the doctor, are you going to be on call the night before? Because if he's or she is on call the night before, they're not going to be well rested. They're going to get phone calls during the night. They may even have to get up and go to the hospital in some situations and then come back home and grab a couple hours rest before they start their surgery schedule. So those are very important questions that you need to ask your surgeon. You also want to ask him about the anesthesiologist. What anesthesiology group do you use? What anesthesiologist will I have? Because you can also look them up. Lots of times with the No Surprise Act that went in place, this should stop this kind of thing from occurring. But I know somebody here who checked to make sure everybody was in network. And then the day of, the anesthesiologist called in sick and they replaced the anesthesiologist with somebody who was out of network. And it cost, she got a bill for $10,000. So those are the kind of things, yeah, those are the kind of things you want to be aware of.
All right. Well, listen, I got to take a quick break. The next question I have is, so you can be thinking about it, is are people recording in the surgery room? Can you get it recorded? I'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Candy Foster. I'm talking with Dr. David Wilcox. We're talking about the American healthcare system and what you need to know. The question I just asked you, doctor, is, you know, are they recording in the surgical rooms? Can you request a recording of the procedure? Is that something that's happening or not? Or what's going on with that?
That is, for the most part, never happening. They don't. The surgical suite is a whole different world. So you may get a doctor who really likes heavy metal and does his best surgery while he's listening to heavy metal. I mean, I've seen all kinds of things in the operating suite. It's a doctor's preference. You want him to be as comfortable as he or she can be. You know, for long surgeries, they may even have little bags so that they can, you know, urinate because they can't get out. They can't get away from the patient if they're doing a 12-hour surgery. They very rarely ever record anything. I've never, in all my healthcare experience, had somebody ask, could they record the procedure? I would think the medical community would frown on that for sure.
It may be coming like everything else. You never know.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about advanced directives and how they work and what they are.
Yeah. So this is a hard conversation for people to have. Advanced directives, but we're all going to die, right, at some point. And you can either die very comfortably if everybody knows and follows, that's important, follows your advanced directives, or you can be flogged, depending on what happens. And there's a chapter in my book about my experience being the person to make my mother's healthcare decisions. And my stepfather was, his brother was making his healthcare decisions. But the important thing about advanced directives is get educated, know exactly what you want. If there's no hope, do you want them to put you on a breathing tube? Because what often occurs when somebody goes brain dead and the family decides, hey, no, we're not ready to lose this person, so they put them on a ventilator, is they end up in a nursing home with a trach and a PEG. A PEG tube feeds them. The trach is how they breathe. They come back into the hospital several times with infections and bed sores, and you do not want that kind of a miserable existence for yourself. The second thing I'll tell you, and this is very important, is have conversations with your healthcare proxy, the person that you decide is going to make your decisions if you're unable to make your decisions. So that's really important to do, because you'll read in my book how when my mother was, and I knew her situation, she had 11 stents in her heart. I knew she wouldn't survive another heart attack. And I got a call from the emergency department at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Monday. And they said, your mother's here. We want to take her to the cath lab. And I knew that there was really no hope, but I went into son mode, right? Because if you have your children doing this, it's very easy for them to be able to say, hey, I'm not ready to lose mom. which I said, yeah, take her. And then 2 minutes later, I got a phone call back to say she was actively dying. Thank God, God was watching out for her, because I went into son mode. And even with all my education in healthcare, I couldn't pull it off. So really important that you have discussions with your healthcare proxy. Decide if you want to be a do not resuscitate. Make sure that you, if you have that information and advanced directives, you have it on your refrigerator in case 911 is called for you. They'll look for it there. And different states have different ways of doing it. So,
well, at what point do you want to have do not resuscitate? I mean, you know, is that, let's talk about that. Because I think that's a key critical factor for a lot of people making that decision, right? Yeah, well, give me your experience on that. What do you suggest?
So yeah, I'll actually tell you a little story about it. So my mother, 6 months before she died, discussed with me getting a do not resuscitate order. She said, you know, I don't think that there's going to be anything when it's time for me to go that they can actually do, because we knew the condition of her heart. And she said to me, what's been your experience? And I said, well, I have been a code nurse before. You know, I've been doing CPR, pumping on people's sternums, feeling their ribs crack underneath. You know, when you know there's no hope, like a cancer patient who is stage four, and you're breaking ribs, and then the family has to come in and see the, you know, the bruised body. Basically, you cover most of it up with a sheet, but somebody who's trying to intubate them, there may be some bruising too around the facial area. So, and by intubating, I mean putting in a breathing tube. So, you know, you have to decide when enough is enough, and only you can make that decision. You know, if you have a condition that's going to be terminal, that would probably be the time to get a do not resuscitate order. Or if you just, you know, you're at that stage of life where you're ready to go, get a do not resuscitate order.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I think what comes up, you know, you hear stories of people coming out of comas in 6 months or a year, 2 years, and you know, and so it gives them hope, right? It gives us hope, like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's got a head trauma, he might come out of a coma, even though the brain says it's brain dead, you know. Do you have to have some medical background to be the proxy, or, you know, or what, do you have advice around that? You know, what happens in these kind of cases?
Yeah, you just need to know what the individual wants done. The medical team will tell you, they'll say, you know, for the most part, I'll say that they'll say, you know, hey, your loved one is brain dead, or, you know, we don't suspect they're going to recover from this. Although in some areas of the medical community, we're quick to sell hope too. And again, you know, going back to my book, I worked with an emergency room physician, and we saw a guy come in, and we tested him, he was brain dead. And he said to me, David, if that's ever me, he said, pull the plug, right? And so he did actually arrest in the men's locker room on a night I wasn't on. And they restored him, put him up on the neuro ICU, and his wife kept saying, oh, he's going to come out of it, but he was brain dead. And I just remember that conversation. And she ended up putting in the PEG tube for the tube feedings and the trach, and he went to a local nursing home, and he came back several times with infections, and then eventually he died about 18 months later. So you just have to know what the person wants.
Yeah.
Have those discussions.
Yeah, that's kind of a nightmare scenario. So yeah, you know, nobody wants to go through that, I'm sure. All right. Listen, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd really like to take a little deep dive into what's going on with prescription drugs, the costs, why they're so high, what we can do about that individually. And so that's what we're going to do. We'll be right back. I want to thank all of you for being on the show today. And if you have some family or friends that you know is going in for a procedure of any kind, please send them this show and connect with Dr. David Wilcox. Let them, help them to be informed so that they can come out healthier than they went in. That's the whole name of the game. So from my ears, I pray that you will continue to look for a CD and simple and nobly unknowable, duly and simple. Take care.